chaos and confusion, there are but two geeks who can clear everything up. Anna and Dave, Geek World, Thursdays at noon on 92.5 KYHY Burbank.
We're back. You're listening to Geek World on 92.5 KYHY. We are your superhero superhosts, Anime and Dave, bringing you the best in the world of geek. Don't forget, if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email to geekworldradio@yahoo.com, check out our website at geekworldradio.com, and follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/geekworldradio.
Geek World brought to you... Sorry. Geek World brought to you by... Is that a blank Yoda?
Yeah. Well, that's like a joke from last week's show.
Yeah. That is a joke from last week's show. All right, well, I'll cut this out then.
No. People should. It's good, you know. It's not blank Yoda when it's on our website on
exactly.
In the video. It's uncensored, man.
Uncensored. We're like Def Comedy Jam.
Something
we're like Geek World Def Comedy Jam.
Except not really deaf.
We're deaf.
Really?
Not deaf like I can't hear.
No.
Like we're cool.
But are we really cool?
I think we're cool.
Okay.
And my mom thinks we're cool.
Well, then it must
That's
be true.
Two votes. That's okay. Like a majority.
Hey, I defer. I defer to you and your mom.
Duh. Clearly. we're going to have a great interview coming up pretty soon. But
yes.
First, we wanted to talk a little bit about some of the Comic-Con stuff we didn't get to, right?
Yeah. We just got through, last hour we talked about being human.
Yes.
Yeah, and just...
Doctor Who, the finale.
Elvira.
Yes, Elvira, Mistress of the Dark.
But let's see, what else? First off,
You have a new moniker, by the way. Do you remember your new moniker?
I am Mistress of the Dork.
Mistress of the Dork,
that
exactly.
That makes you the dork.
I am the dork, yes.
That makes all of you listeners out there, all of you male listeners, you are my dorks,
yes.
And I am your mistress.
Yes. Anime, yes. Mistress of the Dork. I think it's fitting too. I think that's really
totally agree.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great title that you should be very proud of.
I'm so
and
proud.
You should probably put that on a shirt of some sort
I
and
really
wear
should.
It around. Yes. I thought one of the really cool things about I don't know. I guess it was cool if you hadn't gone to E3, but one of the interesting things was there was actually a lot of stuff from E3 that was at Comic-Con.
If you if you haven't gone to E3, it's like, wow,
yeah.
Like I've never seen this before. Of course, if you've gone to E3, then it's like, wow, I saw this 1 month ago.
Yeah, like, exactly. Like, they had that same, you know, along with stuff like, you know, the actual set pieces, like that big
right.
Red Faction robot and the Tron motorcycle guy. You know, there was also stuff like, you know, you could play Red Faction. They were having a Marvel vs. Capcom tournament.
Mm-hmm.
We talked last week about playing Vindictus,
mm-hmm.
and we got to play
free. It's a free game online.
Yes,
and I got this Spirit Hood.
Actually, yeah. If you go online and check out, I think it was called Comic-Con Cosplay, and the bottom there is a picture of Anime in her Spirit Hood.
Yes,
looking very very excited.
Oh, I'm
because
so excited,
you know
it's
you're
awesome.
Very yes.
I've been chasing down that thing since E3.
It
mocked me
it
until
did.
I mocked it back.
It did. Yes, and we totally mocked it back. Exactly. Yes. Let's see. One of the other games we got to play was Fist of the North Star.
Yes,
which I thought was actually really fun. It's basically you just run around and, you know, fight a bunch of guys. It's just a regular brawler where you get to play one of the three members of Fist of the North Star, which of course is an anime if you're not familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
Really the best part about it was that, you know, it's pretty quickly you can do the thing you really want to do. If you've seen Fist of the North Star, which, you know, we've seen
yeah,
you know, a
we've
few
seen
episodes,
some.
You know, really the main point is it's the anime where you hit a guy in a bunch of different areas and he explodes.
Yes.
Like, that's the fun of it. You
yeah.
know, that's what makes it cool.
Now, you played it on the computer, right? Like,
I played it on the Xbox.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Never
mind then.
It was an Xbox 360, yeah. And so, you know, pretty quickly, you know, not even really knowing really what I was doing, I was able to blow a few heads up. So that was pretty sweet.
So the controls were pretty easy?
Yeah, the controls were pretty easy. And I also like the fact that It, you can grab a bunch of vehicles just to get, like, to the next place where you beat up a bunch of guys. Like, I found a horse, and I ran over a bunch of dudes
on
the horse.
Oh, yeah, that was funny.
And then I got off, and I beat a bunch of guys, and then all of a sudden there's a motorcycle there. So I got on that and rode and, you know, ran into a bunch of guys. And it was
I just like that there's, like, horses and motorcycles all, like, next to each other.
Well, that's what's cool about Fist of North Star. If you remember, it's, like, post-apocalyptic. You know, it's like
right.
Mad Max, except it's like Mad Max with ninjas, basically. And so it was actually really fun game, you know. All in all, I actually enjoyed it more than I thought I would.
That's good.
So, you know, so if you're a fan of the anime, you should probably check that out whenever it comes out, which who knows when it comes out. Yeah.
We do our research here.
Yes.
It's actually funny how, you know, the video game section, it was actually pretty big in terms of number of booths. I remember, like, last year, I feel like there was, like, a larger, like, Sony section or a larger, like, PlayStation section, you know?
I'm trying to remember.
They were giving out, like, the ratchets,
yes,
you know?
They were.
But it wasn't so much, like, the video... There weren't as many booths.
You just reminded me of the Ratchet & Clank toys that they had there that don't come out for Christmas. Man, if you would like to purchase Ratchet & Clank memorabilia for Geek World, then you're definitely welcome to.
You know, we have to start making, like, a wish list on, like, you know, on some website.
Please buy us stuff.
We can
be like the daughter United States of Tara. We just have to sit on cakes and look surprised.
Yes.
And we can get all the stuff we want. Yes. I think...
You know, Dave, they might want you to take your shirt off.
Well, I don't do nudity. So, yeah, I think, well, actually, for Ratchet & Clank dolls, that's a whole different thing.
I am the mistress of the dork.
That's true.
I will tell them to sit on a cake and look surprised.
Yes, good point. Very good point, yes. Well, you do have a few things in common with Elvira. You're very pale.
Yes.
And you have,
I have
assets.
Ample bosom.
Yes, which is very, very, very good. And you're very funny, too.
Well, thank you.
And that's the nicest I'm going to be for the rest of the show. From now on, I'm just going to be really, really mean to you. So
you got that. I'm used to it.
Exactly. Well, of course. But let's see. What are some of the other things? Well, we talked last week about the escalator blowing up, which was very fantastic.
That was crazy.
And we enjoyed
it.
We almost got a
glass case knocked on top of us by some guy who leaned on it a little too hard and almost broke some prototype toys. And almost dropped an entire...
Yeah.
Very, very tall glass case on us.
Yes.
That would have been fun.
Yeah, we found a lot of really... Let's get back to toys real quick. We found some really cool toys. One of the things I really thought was awesome is there was a coffee doll.
That was so cool.
Remember that?
Oh my God.
Now, afro and everything.
Was there a gun in that afro?
I don't know. We didn't get to see it. We only got to see one side of it.
Oh, yeah,
so
that's right.
There could have been.
I like to hope that there was, like, a little gun poking out of, like, part of the afro. Cause that would have been so cool.
I mean, that's the best part about coffee, right?
No.
Burn coffee, burn. I love afros so much.
I,
you know, along with that, you know, they had a bunch of cool District 9 stuff, too.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really, really cool. I really liked all the District 9 guns that they had. And, you know, I'm sure they're very expensive, but they're very cool.
I like that we're slowly acquiring pictures of me with gigantic, ridiculous guns.
Yes. Well, you know, chicks with guns sell, you know,
especially alien guns.
Yeah, let me look at Terminator, you know, like Sarah Connor, look at Alien, you know, I mean, aliens, even actually aliens. So really, in the end, you know, chicks with guns is just like, you know, it's a marketable thing.
Yeah.
So we're just making sure to acquire every picture we can of you with all kinds of crazy geek guns.
Cool.
Like, we got one of you with, like, Gears of War.
Hey, as long as the guns don't fire, I'm okay.
You know, we are going back to where I'm from this week, so you might be able to shoot a gun if you'd like to.
I play with bows and arrows. I am all about the bow and arrows. I prefer the longbow personally, but I do not do guns.
Oh, come on. You know, you got to try at least once.
No.
You don't know. No, it's like, you know, you have to.
No.
Yes. No, no. It's like...
Do you not know how clumsy I am at this point?
That's a good point. I think about it. It might
do
be a bad thing.
Do you want me to kill myself? Because I don't want to kill myself.
No, no. I guess now you think about it. Yeah, maybe you shouldn't have a gun. I can see that being very dangerous for everybody around.
I mean, like, there's practically no chance of me not getting hurt.
You just,
somehow,
like, itch your head with the barrel of the gun, not even thinking about it. Yeah.
No, no. With my luck, what would happen is I'd hold the gun and it would just explode.
Yeah, that's possible.
You know,
that is
or
very possible.
I would pull the trigger and, like, the thing, like, I don't know, don't they have things that, like, slide back?
Uh-huh.
And that would, like, slide back, but it would, like, dislodge and, like, hit me in the face.
Yeah, that would probably happen.
Also, I know that guns have kickback. Is that?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and so I would, like, you know, get kicked back into, like, a door or a wall.
Yeah, like a donkey kicks you or something. Yeah, because that happens in real life.
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
I only know guns from TV.
It's like in TV when someone gets shot and they fly back 5 feet, right?
I'm pretty sure that's what really happens.
Which has, you know, is completely
false,
obviously.
TV is always real.
Uh-huh.
Movies are always real.
Yeah.
And I worry about these
things. I think that's the motto we live by, really, right. Is that everything on TV and movies is reality, and everything around you is not reality.
I think it's the greatest
way to
live.
Definitely the Matrix, isn't it? Yeah. Anyway, we're rambling about nothing.
Oh,
so
whatever. We're rambling about everything.
I think, you know, along with the District 9 stuff, you know, there was just a bunch of excellent toys. I know a lot of people were picking up those Green Lantern toys for Darkest Night. And
all the Green Lantern lanterns.
Exactly. Yes, yes. And, you know, it just... why can't we just have everything?
I want everything.
Yes, that's really the main question posed. Yes.
We don't have enough room.
But once
we have enough room, we will have everything.
If you would like to buy Geek World a house, send an email to... never mind.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think. What else?
Well, the Clash of the Titans, which, you know, we still haven't seen. They actually had a pretty neat setup. It was outside, and it had, like, a climbing wall and a jousting ring.
Yeah, totally.
And like, this like, bouncy, slingshotty, I don't even know. It was crazy. Like, bungee bouncing. I don't know.
You know, for kids.
Yeah, and adults. Mostly kids.
Yeah, but that was also making a reference to a movie.
I don't remember.
The Hudsucker Proxy, you ever see that?
Nope.
Oh, it's excellent.
Yeah.
It's an excellent movie. It's
I've heard it's an excellent movie.
It's a Coen Brothers film, and it's about the inventor of the hula hoop.
Oh, right. I've heard
of
that.
Yes, it's fantastic. Yeah. Tim Robbins is great. So is Paul Newman in it. There you go. Good times had by all.
Woo!
So if you would like to talk about the Hudsucker Proxy, email us at... Wait a second. You know, I have to just say one thing. I really don't know what else to say about Comic-Con, but... We saw James Frain there.
Yes.
And we're a little behind on True Blood right now. We're like two or so episodes behind, or maybe more by the time you hear this. But I have to say, if that dude doesn't get nominated for at least a Golden Globe, there's something wrong.
Oh my God. He's genius in it.
Yeah.
And we really enjoyed him in the Cape also.
Yeah,
but,
totally.
But yeah, in True Blood, genius.
I still remember him from, I swear, I saw the movie Reindeer Games in the theaters like back in like 98.
Why'd you do that?
Or whatever. Well, I didn't know any better back then, you know? I mean, Ben Affleck, you know, we all didn't realize how much of a tool he was quite yet. I think this was still, like, what, right after Armageddon. And, you know, Gary Sinise was the bad guy. It was one of Charlize Theron's, like, first movies.
Hmm.
It seemed like a good idea at the time, wasn't it? It was a John Frankenheimer movie, too, by the way. It didn't work out so well. So I wouldn't recommend ever seeing that movie. But
I wasn't planning on
it. But hey, James Frain is awesome now, so that's the most important thing.
He is so cool.
He's so cool, isn't he?
So cool.
God, I just love this show so much. True Blood is just so good.
Yeah.
And, you know, and obviously this ties in with stuff we're talking about being human. They couldn't be any different, just any more different, just because True Blood is all about, like, you know, as we talked about before, it is the show, it is what R-rated movies used to be.
Yeah.
Like, you can't make money by making an R-rated movie anymore. It's very, very, oh, you know what? I just thought of something. Cut that. There was some other stuff at Comic-Con we wanted to talk about. There was some, it didn't seem like we picked up as much stuff, giveaway stuff, but they had very odd things you could do that had to do with picture taking.
Yeah, like you could take your picture and have you as part of the Expendables.
Yes.
And you could take your picture and get a picture in 3D, like Resident Evil.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
But you had to wait in a really, really long line.
Yeah.
And
we don't do lines.
We don't do lines at all.
No. But yeah, it was really cool. Like, the Resident Evil ones especially, because I think they had basically, it's like a picture of Mila with a shotgun.
Yeah.
And then it's like you, and it's in 3D, and it looks great. And of course, you can be part of the Expendables, which is like, you know, it's cool,
honestly,
man.
Honestly, though, like, you know, for girls, like, why would I want a picture of me standing next to someone, like, as beautiful as that? It just, you know, would make
Mila
me feel...
Jovovich?
Yeah, it would make me feel bad about myself.
Well, you know, you don't have to feel too bad, anime. You're okay. You're doing okay,
you know,
yeah.
I appreciate that.
See,
but it's like, but I'm not Mila, you know? It's like, she's just...
Well, who is Mila, though, really?
Mila?
I mean, come on, she's... Yeah,
that's
I mean,
true.
She's like...
That's true. I guess I could just think of her as, like, not actually human. Because she's kind of not. You know, she is the fifth element.
You know, I'm not going to talk about, you know, how good of an actor she is or not, but in a way, she does the roles that, you know, Sigourney Weaver was doing.
Yeah.
You know, she is that tall, you know, good-looking, strong female actress.
Action star, too.
You know, exactly. Like, you know, ever since, really, the Fifth Element, well, she did Fifth Element, then Resident Evil, and she's done all the Resident Evil movies, and, you know, she's good at that part. That's
yeah.
who she is, you know, and she's
and
really
I
cool.
will take her playing that part over
yes.
and over and over again.
You never saw the movie Cuffs, did you?
No.
Well, that movie is Christian Slater, where he takes over, like, this private cop thing for his brother who got killed by drug dealers. I don't know. Anyway.
Let's talk more about movies I've never seen.
Mila Jovovich is, like, his girlfriend, though, in it, and this was, like, back in 91. Mm. I remember she's a so fine in that movie, and I didn't even realize it was her until, like, many years later, because, you know, she was not in everything I'd seen up until then. You know. Yes. She might have been dazed and confused at that point, but I still don't. I don't think so. So anyway, we should probably take a break. But when we get back, we have a really great interview with Jeff Marriott, who's a comic book writer. And also after that, we're going to be talking a little bit about the Avengers and maybe some possible Marvel characters who could show up at some point in the Avengers. And also we might talk a little bit about a certain Comic-Con exclusive Thor trailer that we may or may not have seen on the web. So,
yeah.
Exactly, yeah. We'll be back with you in just a moment.
What's happening, people? This is Aldous Hodge, and you are listening to Geek World.
We're back. You're listening to Geek World on 92.5 KYHY. We are your superhero superhosts, Anime and Dave, bringing you the best in the world of geek. Don't forget, if you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to geekworldradio@yahoo.com, check out our website at geekworldradio.com, and follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/geekworldradio. So, Dave?
Yes.
You know what time it is now?
Oh, yeah.
It's time for an interview.
Heck yeah. Well, we talked...
Dave, I would like to interview you right now.
All right, go for it.
Dave, who are we going to interview?
We are going to interview Jeff Marriott, who is a currently a freelance comic book writer. He has also worked for Wildstorm and IDW. And we like to think of him as the man responsible for bringing Muppet Angel back for the comic books.
Yes, because we couldn't have more Muppet Angel on TV because those jerkos, they took our Angel off TV.
Yes.
But Jeff Marriott brought Muppet Angel back in comic form, and we will forever be thankful to him for that.
Heck yeah. But before we start the interview, we had a little bit of a malfunction. And
a technical malfunction.
Exactly. And so, basically, the first question we posed was not asked.
It was asked.
It just wasn't recorded. And the question was, how did you get into the comic book industry? So, here you go.
So, I was managing a bookstore in La Jolla, California, and I hired a woman. His name was Angie Voorhees, and she said her husband worked in comic books. I had been a big comic book reader and comic book fan growing up, but for a decade or so, I had kind of been out of the loop. And she said, yeah, her husband works in comic books. His name is Jim Lee, and he's kind of a big deal. And I'm like, oh, I never heard of him. Okay, well, I'll look him up sometime. It turned out that Jim Lee was Jim Lee, who had... he was still working at Marvel then, and he was just about to leave Marvel and be one of the founders of Image Comics. So I had always been a would-be writer and doing some writing and made Angie read some of my writing, because as my assistant manager, she has to do whatever I tell her. If I say, hey, read this short story, she has to do it. So the chain that owned these stores up and down California decided to close all their Southern California stores, and suddenly I was out of a job, and with my wife and another partner, I started working on developing our own independent bookstore, which turned 17 this year, called Mysterious Galaxy. But I also needed some income, and Jim had started Image Comics with his partners and had Wildstorm Productions up and running, and a book called Wildcats, as it was a big hit, and made a deal with the Topps Trading Card Company to do trading cards based on Wildcats. And said, called me up one morning and said, hey, I need someone to write the text on the back of this line of trading cards. It's 100 trading cards. And the figure he quoted me to write 100 trading cards was far more than I had made at managing a bookstore for a month. So I said, sure. And I went into the office, and I met everybody, and I learned who the Wildcats were, and I had not actually realized that someone wrote that little paragraph on the back of a trading card, but it turns out someone has to, and someone has to get paid for it. So why not me?
That's great.
So I wrote those, and then I got invited back to do another project and do another project, and... gradually, I guess I was spending enough time at the studio that they decided they might as well pay me for being there. And they brought me in a marketing position. I was doing, answering fan mail and running the fan club and starting to do communications with the outside world via press releases and that kind of thing. And then I found myself a full-time comic book professional, eventually vice president of marketing.
So you've worked both on a freelance basis and as staff at a comic book company. What are some of the pros and cons of each?
Pros of being on staff are you get a steady paycheck. You get a steady paycheck. benefits, all that kind of stuff. I actually have worked at two essentially startup comic book companies. I worked at Wildstorm in its early days, and we built that company up into something big and important enough for DC Comics to buy it. And then I worked for the Time Warner massive multimedia national international bureaucracy for 5 years and couldn't take it anymore and moved over to a company called IDW Publishing that was a little startup and was their first editor-in-chief and helped develop them into the fairly large powerhouse that they are now. So that financial security of working for an established company and not having to worry about, am I going to get a check this month or am I going to get a check in this six-month period, which as a freelancer has happened, where you have to just wait and wait and wait, is a very good thing. On the other hand, as a freelancer, I can get up in the morning and walk down three steps into the back of the house and go to work.
Right.
So I set my own hours, I set my own schedule, I do what I want to do, and then I write something and I send it out and I hope it sells. And I love that freedom, but the trade-off is always worrying about money.
At IDW, you guys, you guys do a lot of comic books based on TV and film properties.
Yep.
And I was wondering, was there anything that you, like, any movie or TV show that you really wanted to adapt into a comic book that was something that was, like, that you really loved, that you would like to adapt into a comic book at some point?
There are still things that I would love to do, but that would never get done. As comics or as novels, I've also written a lot of tie-in novels. And for instance, I would love to do The Man from U.N.C.L.E. As a kid growing up, that was the height of cool in those days. And I still think it would be fun. It'll never happen, because there's no market for The Man from U.N.C.L.E. merchandise, sadly, these days.
You could bring it back.
Could bring it back.
That's true. You could have a cool reboot. Yeah. It worked for Battlestar Galactica.
So. It's true. It's true. It fails dismally for a lot of other things that are of similar vintage.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. Bionic Woman, we won't talk about that.
Okay, well, speaking of licensed properties, you've worked on some of the Angel and CSI and Charmed comic books. What's it like to work with characters that are so deeply connected to both just the live action show, but also to the actors that play them?
Anytime I do a tie-in project, the first consideration that I have is having respect for the original material, whether or not it's something that I am passionate about or something that I just appreciate. I have to find in it what it is that its fans appreciate, because if they don't like what I'm doing, then I haven't done my job right. And I have to listen to the actors' voices and try to replicate that in the dialogue that I write, because I don't have the advantage of having that actor there to read those lines. I only have what I put down on paper, and that has to sound in the reader's head like they're hearing it on TV. So really the main job is capture those voices, and if I've done that, then the rest of it they're going to accept.
Now, have you ever had fans of, say Angels, one of the things you worked on, have you ever had fans of something that is a property get angry at you because of some of the creative choices that you took with?
Yeah, that's a given in the business, and you kind of have to let it slide off you. One thing that happens is if you write a novel, there can be a 9, 10, 11-month window between when I deliver the novel and when the novel hits the bookstores. And in that time, the whole world on TV might change completely.
Mm.
When I wrote the first Angel novel that I wrote, Angel didn't have a name. There was a hint that he might have been called Liam back in the old Irish days, but turned out that wasn't the case.
Oh, right.
But by the time the book came out, he had a name and everybody knew he was Angelus. We didn't know that. It had not appeared on TV. So then it was like, well, how could you write this and not even have his name in it? Well, he didn't have a name then. And sometimes shows that don't have super strict continuity will contradict themselves. So in that case, there's no hope of not contradicting something in the book. But people will always complain that you did contradict something.
Can you remember any particularly funny criticisms that people had?
Sadly, no. Nothing that's... It always seems tragic at the time.
No, yeah. Bulletin boards of, like, the most obnoxious things you've been written?
No, and even if I did, I probably couldn't say, because I'd risk alienating that one person who is now the head of 20th Century Fox.
Well, that sort of goes along with my next question, and one that you also might not be able to answer, but since you do work with a lot of TV and film properties, have you ever gotten strange notes from the studios that to you don't even seem like... that don't even make any sense? Like, you know, for instance, maybe you had Angel eating ice cream sundae, and they'd be like, Angel would never do that, or, you know, something to that matter.
The worst thing that I had along those lines was I wrote the only licensed fiction that's ever been done for The Shield. Great TV show on FX.
Yeah.
One of my favorite TV shows of all time, and I got the chance to write a 5-issue miniseries, comic book miniseries. And I turned in an outline that I thought was pretty good, and the note that I got back was, you have the cops in this breaking the law. The cops, they're the good guys. They wouldn't do that. To which my response was, have you seen the show? In the first episode, remember when they killed a cop? But to his credit, Sean Ryan, who created the show, stepped in and said, no, no, no. What he wants to do is fine. He can do whatever he wants to do. Leave him alone.
That's awesome.
And he was a huge help on that, and actually wrote an afterword for the trade paperback edition of it. And
that's really cool.
I got to interview Michael Chiklis and CCH Pounder, and it was just a terrific experience all the way around, except for that one crazy, crazy note.
That's so awesome.
So you were just saying that you were a fan of The Shield when you got to write that. Were you a fan of Buffy or Angel or any of the other properties that you worked on before you worked on them?
When I was asked to do Buffy, originally to write the first Buffy novel that I wrote was an adaptation of three episodes that were kind of Xander-centric, and it became the Xander Chronicles. And I had not actually watched Buffy at that point. I was recommended by a guy that I had written a novel with based on Gen 13 comic book characters. And he was writing Buffy novels, and his editor wanted him to do the Xander book, and he didn't have time, so he said, oh, go get Jeff, he'll do it. And so she called me up and she said, would you be interested in writing this Buffy novel? And I said, of course. And then I went home and watched a lot of Buffy and found out that, hey, this is really pretty good. I should have been watching this all along. So I got caught up on that pretty quickly, and then I wrote a nonfiction with a couple of partners. I wrote a nonfiction book about the show, the licensed behind-the-scenes guide, and then I was invited to pitch for this new show, Angel, that was coming out. So I was in on that from the beginning because I had been watching Buffy, and then I wrote, the same three of us wrote the nonfiction guide to Angel, so I knew that one really well going in. Buffy I had to play catch up on, and there's other things, like I wrote a Star Trek novel, and of course I've seen Star Trek over the years, but there's, at that point, there were 35 years of Star Trek continuity that a lot of the fans who would buy this book knew inside and out, and I didn't know in that kind of detail, so I had to do a lot of research on that. But it's either you know it going in, or you just have to do right. A ton of background work before you can start.
Now, let me ask you a question. Have you seen the finale to Lost? I don't want to give anything away to you.
You know, I watched the first episode of Lost, and I think I missed the second one, and then I tried to watch the third one. But I felt, pardon the pun, I felt so lost because of not having seen the second one that I gave up.
So did everyone else at the end.
So I didn't even watch the whole thing, so I didn't watch the finale, and I don't know what happened.
Okay, because we were kind of hoping...
I watched Gilligan's Island, though. I hear it's kind of the same.
Because we were hoping if you could do an adaptation of Lost, if you could make it make any sense, the end to us, we'd really appreciate it, because, it didn't make much sense.
Really?
Yeah.
That's unfortunate. The show that I would like to end I wrote two novels based on the TV series Las Vegas, the NBC show.
Oh, yeah.
And one of those, at the end of one season, they blew up the hotel, the Montecito.
Mm-hmm.
And then Gary Scott Thompson, the show's creator, wanted to have a new Montecito at the beginning of the next season, which would be maybe 2.5 months separating them, maybe 3 months. You can't really build a giant Las Vegas hotel in 3 months. So he said, well, okay, let's say it was 6 months, which you also can't do. This is TV. But he didn't want to tell the story on the air of what happened in that six-month period. So he said, you write the book, and here's basically what I'm thinking they're doing. I'm thinking she's in London, and he's over here, and he's doing that. And so he gave me those really broad stroke outlines of what the characters were doing for those 6 months, and had me write the book, and then occasionally on the show would have people refer back to that period. So in a way, I was contributing to the canon of the show, which was very cool and very fun. And then they got to a cliffhanger episode, and the writer's strike happened.
No.
And so the cliffhanger episode aired, and there was never a follow-up episode to that. That was the final episode of the show. And so I wanted to go, you know, what happens to these characters in this horrible situation? And let's tie up these loose ends. And the publisher had, because the show was gone, had let the license lapse. And so there's no one to write it for. And that was my disappointment. That was the show I wanted to end.
Well, that's too bad, yeah, because we actually were fans of that show. We liked that show very much. And now to think about it, you're right.
Yeah.
it blew up, and it's like, that's the end. It was sort of like anime we were just talking too long about the Elf season finale.
Yeah.
That like basically left off with Elf being, you know, captured by the government.
Captured by the government. And the very first episode, they had pretty much told the audience that if Elf was ever captured, the government would dissect him and torture him. And so all these kids who had been watching all these years left off with, oh my god, the government is descending on Elf and they're going to torture him. The end.
It's one of the happier endings on TV.
So do you remember how you wanted to end Las Vegas?
No, I didn't actually get in that far into it because I knew I wasn't going to be allowed the opportunity. So.
Okay, back to Angel for a second. Smile Time was one of the funniest episodes of Angel.
Yes.
Do you know who came up with the idea to bring Muppet Angel back in comic form?
That would be me.
Nice.
You rock.
Yes. Got to give you a high five for that one, buddy.
Yeah,
thanks.
You too.
I actually was the guy who acquired the license before I left IDW. I was working with Fox to make that happen because I knew those people from having written all the books. And when Dark Horse let the Angel license lapse, I said, we got to get that license, and we did. And then I wrote a bunch of Angel comics, and then I kind of got, for reasons that are probably too obnoxiously technical to go into here, I got disenchanted with writing Angel stories. Mm-hmm. And I had written 11 Angel novels and 11 Angel comics, and I thought that was a good round number. Let's call it done. And then the editor called me up and said, hey, we're doing this anthology thing, and we'd like a little short Angel something. If you could do whatever you wanted, is there something that you'd want to do? And I said, can I do Puppet Angel? And he said, sure. So I got to do like a 12-page Puppet Angel story and broke my own early retirement to come back and do a Puppet Angel story.
Well, it was a worthy reason to break that retirement. That's awesome. That's still our... We loved the show. We've seen every episode, but that's our top episode.
Having worked on the nonfiction book, we got to spend a lot of time on the set, mm-hmm. meeting everybody. And so having been in David Fury's office and chatting with him was just really fun to see him back in his office with a puppet controlling.
That's really cool. That's really cool. Of all the stuff that you've worked on, if you were able to do a crossover of any of the stuff that you worked on, what would you cross over?
You know, I did a Zorro short story a couple of years ago.
Huh.
I think it would be cool to tell the untold story of when Angel was in early California.
Nice, yeah.
Met the Fox. That could be fun.
That would be cool.
I would definitely read that. That would be awesome. That would be really cool. Good answer. Very good answer.
So you mentioned before that Jim Lee was essentially part of your way into the comics
yes.
industry. Have you worked with him since?
I have a comic book miniseries coming out right now called Garrison that's from Wildstorm Productions. It's the first thing I've done at Wildstorm since I left their employ several years ago. So I'm not working directly with Jim, but he's actually the publisher, or the co-publisher with Dan DiDio of DC Comics and Wildstorm now. So Jim and I are still friends. We still see each other once or twice a year, and everything's fine with us. And now I get to actually have a new Wildstorm comic. That's a cool thing.
That's awesome. That's really cool. Was there anything else that you're working on right now that you want to talk about?
Garrison's coming out now. That's kind of a crazy action adventure, slightly futuristic, like 8-10 years in the future. The first issue kind of sets things up and doesn't have the madcap action that the later issues have, but beginning with issue 2, it's just zooming all the way to the end. Fade to Black is a 5-issue miniseries that's coming from Image Comics Shadowline that's kind of an affectionate tribute to horror movies. It's about 5 spoiled Hollywood actors who are stranded in the desert and being chased by cannibal cultists.
Nice!
So there's 3 issues of Fade to Black out, and I have a nonfiction book tied to the TV series Criminal Minds coming out in August. It tells the true stories of the crimes that are referenced on the show.
Huh, that's really cool.
And in October I have a novel that's set in the Dark Sun gaming universe that Wizards of the Coast has that they're relaunching.
Wow.
So that's pretty much what's on the plate for me.
Wow, that's a lot of really cool stuff.
Okay, and my last question is, what advice do you have for people who are interested in writing comics?
It's a tough market to break into. It's not impossible, but it's difficult. The good thing is that there's a lot more options now than there were a few years ago in terms of where you can go with your comics, because you can submit stuff to the big three, whoever the big three are at any given time, Marvel, DC, IDW, Dark Horse, whoever you're interested in. You can also do your own comics and put them online. You can do your own comics and put them out through various self-publishing endeavors. You can work with small presses. You can get a bunch of guys together and have a collective. There's a phenomenal variety of outlets for comics right now. I have a comic coming out soon. Probably should mention this too. I have a long-running series called Desperados. It's a horror western series. It's been coming out since 1997. And a short-lived miniseries that I did with a partner named Shannon Eric Denton a couple years ago called Graveslinger, which is also a horror western series. So we decided, hey, let's do a crossover.
Nice.
Desperados Graveslinger is coming out sometime soon, but it's exclusive to PlayStation.
Oh.
I did not know that there was a PlayStation comic book store where you could go and buy comics and read them on your PlayStation. But it turns out that there is, and people do this. So
that's excellent.
We've got this exclusive PlayStation comic coming out.
So that's really cool.
Amazing variety of places that you can tell your stories if you want to tell your stories. And so I encourage people to do it.
That's good advice.
What's your favorite thing that you've written?
My favorite thing? I'm very fond of Desperados. We've had some amazing artists over the years. It was the first real professional work by John Cassaday, who is now a mega star. And another Desperados miniseries brought John Severin, who had been doing comics since the 40s, back into doing comics after a long time away from it. And he's been working pretty regularly since then. So I got to work with terrific artists and also have some positive force in their careers. In novels, probably a novel called River Runs Red that's a horror novel published by Penguin a couple of years ago. That's just important to me personally. So I'd say comics, Desperados, fiction, River Runs Red.
Well, I have to ask you one more question now. I noticed that you've worked on a lot of I can't say the word horror correctly, but I'm going to say horror. Do you have a favorite horror movie that you look at as like you know, sort of a big influence on you?
The original version of The Haunting is brilliant. The Exorcist scared the crap out of me.
Yeah.
And still, that music. If I hear that music, I get creeped out still. So that's something that, you know, I try to not necessarily go for the same kind of themes, but to scare the crap out of people is a good thing.
Yeah, we saw the original Haunting not too long ago. It was pretty freaky. I like the door that kept on pushing.
That's terrifying when that happens.
Definitely.
Or the you know, you were holding my hand all night. No, I wasn't.
Yeah.
Well, then, yeah, guess it shivers.
That was a great interview.
Yeah, it really was. You know, how funny is that? He's like, Jim Lee? I've never heard of that guy before. thanks so much, Jeff. And he's got a ton of really great stuff already out and coming up. His series Desperado and Graveslinger, the crossover, exclusive to PlayStation, is out, along with his book Garrison and Fade to Black. And this month, his Criminal Minds nonfiction is also going to come out. And in October, his Dark Sun novel is going to be coming out. So
very cool.
Have to check out all that stuff. But I guess we should probably take a break now, huh?
Yeah, we should go into another break. But when we get back, we're going to talk about some Avengers stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll talk a little bit about something Thor.
Yes.
You know, and if you're all lucky, you'll get to hear us talk a little bit more about iShield 21, which we brought up on our anime show, and I think we just can't stop talking about it.
You know, there's only one thing I can say to that. Blast off, Ice Shield 21!
And at that, we will blast off.